LNE Volume 3, a video by the great Franklin Carbonati, spanning Rome, Milan, London, New York, Paris, Barcelona, Montreal, and Toronto, featuring Rebo, Volvo, Snens, MTNW, Anger, Talker, Xavier, BO South, Lure, Rehab, Time, Zonic, XSM, Kemto, Salon, TD, Emno, Fayer, Toser, Nove, Stays, Villo, OSF, Waste, Soul, Zano, Guko, and What. The full video is now available on our Patreon. Enjoy, peace, love, and respect. All right, and we are live at Dax's crib. Dude, thank you so much for
Slash Studio.
Slash Studio is the last stop on the trip. We've just been driving all over the east coast of the country, and this is the last stop. Yo, thank you so much for allowing us in here. And this is a beautiful spot you got, man, for real.
Who do I look at? Y'all are the camera.
Nah, dude, look at us.
Yeah, no, hey, thanks for coming through. Y'all are making big moves, you know. You've made tremendous efforts to be here, so.
Yeah, no.
Thank you guys.
Yo, I'm super hyped. I was watching a video.
There's a mic over here. Hold up.
Yeah, the closer it is, the better. That's the one thing. You know, you rep Atlanta a lot in your life and in your artwork, and you know, you're a big proponent of, like, you do a lot of murals all over the city and shit like that. What is this place done for you in terms of, like, shaping your mind from the moment you moved here until now?
I guess this place here, you know, I can say so much, but I came from South Florida in the Everglades, over in Naples, Immokalee area, Golden Gate, Fort Myers. That area, especially back in the 80s, was just very desolate, and it was just all nature, pretty much. There wasn't golf courses and all that back then. They scoot up on here. But, you know, coming here, I came to visit my father and my brother here in 1985, and this place was full of culture, and it was just like, it was almost like, I don't know, are you guys from Manhattan or New York?
From Brooklyn.
Yeah, from New York,
You don't know what it's like to, like, go to New York, and it's like, you can feel energy, like, radiating in and out of you there, because there's so much energy, but that's what this place was like for me. When I first showed up here, it was just like overwhelming amounts of energy. I guess I'm sensitive to energy even as a child, but this shit just put a spark on my ass to like really do graffiti, because I learned that as well. I found out about that, discovered it when I moved here. Mm. Or before even that, when I visited here, I discovered graffiti. So when I went back to Florida, it was just something that was just spinning in my head, and I was just trying to draw it. I just wanted to understand it. I wanted to get back to see more. I was just obsessed. So actually moving here and being able to immerse myself in culture, and meet so many different characters and just see so much that I would have never had access to if I had never moved here. So I guess it's something that's never died. I'm just always just like so curious, you know, like I still drive through neighborhoods, and things are ever changing here too, which I used to hate, but I've also just learned to be like, oh wow, that's new, or just, oh, that sucks, that's gone. You know, I'm just always just hyper aware. I don't know. I just get off, I guess, just like navigating through Atlanta, navigating life here has just always been endlessly exciting.
Mm-hmm. You don't ever feel like isolated, because like you were saying, you have people coming down all the time visiting you, you know. Does it ever feel like lonely out here in the cut? Because like I'm from the city, and me picturing people living out here, I feel like there's not much, you know.
You know, when I first moved here, I guess it's going on 4 years now, I moved out here and it was all woods. They've been cutting all the woods down around here, as I just explained to y'all before we started recording. But when I got out here, I felt like I fucking had been defeated a little bit. I felt like I got pushed out the city, because my house I was living in used to be $1,000 a month, and then 10 years later, it's like $1,750. You know, it's like, and it's a piece of shit 1890s house with a well in the basement. It's like a Victorian house, you know. It used to be, it was really dope. It had fireplaces in it and shit, but I feel like I got pushed out of the city, and then I was out here, and I started on a spiritual journey with Rhyme, as a lot of people know, going to do many different ceremonies around the world, mostly ayahuasca. And within that, I got really comfortable in my skin. I got comfortable. I also was very aware of, like, bad habits and things. And I kept reflecting back in the jungle, reflecting to my home here in this place, and was just like, oh, man, I can't wait to get back there and just be quiet. Mm-hmm. Like, and then when I got here, being quiet and being by myself ended up being like the biggest luxury ever. And I started having the perspective of like, I'm so blessed to be right here. And then quarantine happened, and it was just like, I was ready to be by myself, willing to be by myself, comfortable being by myself. And then so blessed that I was like, I'm able to sit here and paint. I can go lay naked in my yard, you know, grow plants. There's cats, foxes, owls. I'm in good company with nature. Mm-hmm. which sounds like hippie kooky shit to some people, but to me it's just our natural intent is not even humans but animals.
Yeah.
And so I'm in good company with nature, but nevertheless I got really just, I still feel so blessed to be here. It's like a place of zen, and when you live in the city you have no option to go be quiet. I can go fucking smoke crack down there if I want right now and hang out with a million fucking crackheads, or I can sit here and be quiet and zen. I have an option.
Exactly.
But you know, when you're living in that shit, you're just in that shit and you become part of that shit.
Yeah, and it's like, it's so key to be able to, like you said, be able to be alone, because some people can't handle that shit.
Yeah.
So when you move down here...
We should talk about that.
No, let's do it. Like, so when you move down here, it was... I'm saying down here, like, too farther away from the city.
Yeah, we're actually like 6.9 miles out of the city, but in Atlanta, that's like... In New York, that'd probably be like 40 miles or 50 miles. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like going to... I don't know, where all them fucking... what's one of those towns up there that's like really peaceful? There's a school up there. And when you leave New York and go north, like not Rochester. I've been to all these cities.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's like ayahuasca ceremonies and stuff out there. There's so like landlines.
Was it like through the ayahuasca that you decided to move here, or were you already planning on it?
No, I had moved here already. You know, I've always kind of been really intuitive. I can even like kind of predict shit sometimes where I can't predict things. And I don't know. I just... my house I lived in, I had a lot of friends in the neighborhood. There was a place called The Bench. It's famous. It's like our 149th Street in Grand Concourse. It's called The Bench behind Bim's Liquor Store. They rebuilt it. It's all gentrified and shit now, hence me leaving the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But it's a neighborhood I've been kicking shit in since 92, 93. The Bench was hanging out there from 94. My whole life grew up there. Anyway, where the fuck was I going with that shit? Anyway, no, but moving here, I just wanted to get out of that neighborhood, and then I started trying to figure out, I had to get out of that house, trying to figure out where to live. Kept finding all these cool places everywhere with studio situations, and found this, and was just like, let me go out there and look at that. Mm-hmm. And, there's trains. It was like, it's like, this is like Mayberry or some shit over here. And I was like, man, this is really peaceful. And then I moved here, and the winter came, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm all by myself. Oh shit, like... And I just kept going down to the city. I would never be here. I just kept fucking finding myself. And I was just like, why did I move so fucking far away? Which is only 6.9 miles. But in Atlanta, that's, like I said, that's like 40 miles for y'all probably. So anyway.
How was your first experience doing ayahuasca? Did you go into it on some spiritual shit right away?
Yeah, you know, I had learned about the ceremonies in general and the respect for ceremonies, and ceremonies just being a way to show whatever you're doing. Like, we could have a ceremonial shot of tequila, but we would have intentions and maybe do a breathing exercise and, you know, sage the room. And like we describe it like almost throwing a really nice dinner party, you know? And but anyway, going into my first ayahuasca, I had did some other ceremonial stuff, mushrooms and DMT ceremonies, and I've been to deprivation tanks, tarot cards, and we just went and did all sorts of stuff. We were just searching, you know, and just being open to learning or seeing what works or what, you know, might have a good chemistry with how I work. And it led into ayahuasca. I was in France with Rhyme. He was in Paris getting ready for a show. I was just there kicking it with him and helping him out with his paintings and stuff and learning. And he had these shamans he knows from the Shipibo tribe in Peru. And one, the main one, I'm not going to say their names or anything right now, but one of them was there for some art stuff outside Paris. And he knew, I don't know how it all worked out, but somehow we end up with these shamans from Shipibo tribe that Rhyme knows. And we rented a Japanese tea house, like an hour or two outside of France. On the river sign, and it's up in the hills, and it's almost like being in the Amazon. It didn't even feel like France. And we ended up like doing a ceremony out there. It was my first one. We did two nights, and it was like having an exorcism.
Yeah. What did it reveal to you? What did you feel?
I just faced so much stuff, from humility, embarrassment, anger, pain, just going through a whole slew of things that I've always gotten trophies for, really, you know, a lot of the things that have gotten me respect, a lot of the things that people like to hear about or expect out of me, I faced and realized that there's no regrets. And it was just part of the character that I had embellished for myself. Just growing up here, you just become certain things, and then certain things get you trophies and certain things get you, get your ass whooped, whatever, you know. So I started just operating in a certain type of programming, which I think you can only be like that here. What I mean by that too is just being shallow. You know, like all I cared about was cars and shit so much. Graffiti cars, getting money. However you got to get it.
No, psychedelics, man, they're an amazing thing because, like, I grew up very antisocial and, like, kept to myself and shit a lot of the time. And when I took my first LSD trip, I realized a lot of stuff that I didn't think I was capable of thinking about. You know what I mean? And, like, mushrooms and stuff like that, it just breaks you out of a shell and makes you realize that these material possessions and, like, these little insecurities you have are bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, we're truly connected, and, like, the only meaning of life is, like love, as corny as it sounds, but, like, just genuine connection and, I don't know, man, just vibing.
Yeah, I mean,
with, like,
right over here in the studio, there's usually a Chevy Chevelle SS396. It's, like, original numbers. It's just a prized possession thing. And it's like a dope boy fucking, like, I don't know. It's like your birthright as a dope boy to have this car type of, some kind of car that's just, in Georgia, we like muscle cars. So I've had this car my whole life, and it's another part of, like, an extension of me. People always ask about it. Yeah. Can you bring it out? Are you driving that car? Can I ride in it? You know, and it was always sitting there, and people always come over, and it's always just like, I don't know. It's like this, it's like its own energy. But, after doing ayahuasca, and, like, you know, when you drive a car like that, you have to have a pistol. There's just no way around it. Someone will take the shit from you. And, you know, I got a lot of pride. I'll be like, nobody's ever going to take this car from me, ever. Mm-hmm. And then started coming back in ayahuasca, how protective I am of this car. I'm willing to, like, kill over it, you know? Mm-hmm. And not even willing to kill. I was, like, almost like I dare you to even try to take my car. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's just this attitude, and it's just normal here. It's normal. And I realized how unnormal it was. And I realized it's like, wow, just like I got another car that no one cares about. It's a Honda, you know? And you can even tell this by, like, I drive that Honda all the time, and no one says nothing. You pull out the Chevy and girls want to jump in your car. They'll leave their friends and get in your car at a gas station. Don't even know who you are.
Really?
It's just like a line of credit. Like, they know you all right. You got this car, you know? Yeah. Like, and it's just like all these fucking thoughts just always roll through my head. And now I hate the car.
Really?
After my whole life, I moved it out of here because I was like, I need studio space. I was like, it's just in my way, and it's a distraction. It's just a lot of things. And then also, I don't even like pulling it out because I'm always like, oh, fuck, let me go grab my gun. And I hate guns now. Mm-hmm. I hate the thought of shooting somebody or being shot. And
all this came about in one way.
In ayahuasca, for sure. Like, totally. Just never even thought about a lot. I never thought too deep about a lot of this stuff. It just was something I became, or just an embellishment of my character. You know?
Yeah, it's wild. I'm so happy that you're saying this shit because, like, I've never done ayahuasca. I've never done DMT or nothing like that. And, like, I always ask people who have done it, like, any specifics. I was actually just talking about yesterday on the podcast. We were talking about it, and I was like, any specifics of how it's changed you? And usually people can't give me specifics. They just say, like, overall realizations, but they can never tell me, like, what realizations. And, like, just that of seeing past, like, a material, and, like, being able to look at it almost from, like, an outside perspective of, like, look what it's doing to me, look what it's bringing, look what it involves. It involves me carrying this gun and all this shit. That's some powerful shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it attracts strange attention, you know, sometimes good, sometimes bad. And also, it's a status symbol. Like, you see me, I didn't get dressed up for this podcast. I like to just be comfortable now. I'm always getting paint all over myself. I'm just like a child, or like making a mess all the time. But that used to not be my character. I used to always have to, like, change my paint clothes, keep paint clothes in my car or clean clothes. Like, if I go paint freight, change with my friends, and afterwards I'm going to go to the club, I ain't going to dress like this. I got to put my new clothes. But just like this whole, like, I can take you upstairs. I got a fucking closet, fucking the whole bedroom turned into a closet, you know? And I even look at that, and I'm just like, what the fuck was wrong with you? You know, it's like everything's just a sign of, like, this dysfunctional, what I consider dysfunctional thought process.
It's funny because you say you consider it dysfunctional, but most people, like you said, it's applauded. It's not like if you got cool clothes, if you got nice shit, if you got this nice car, that's not dysfunctional in the. But you're looking at it that way, and I mean, I agree with you. Like there's like, it's hard to have that balance. You know what I mean? You have all this shit. With all this shit comes these, like you said, like these distractions. And it becomes something that isn't to be applauded, but it is applauded.
Yeah.
You know, in everyday life.
I mean, when it goes so much further than that, you know, I mean, I've always done the most drugs, sold the most drugs, trophies, for all that shit. Whoop someone's ass, just get a trophy, you know what I'm saying? And then that's not cool. It's all that stuff was like, I felt so successful in life because I had accomplished those things. And I don't know, I just don't own that no more. Mm-hmm. I don't fuck with it.
Yeah, we mentioned earlier about being a loner, and I think one thing that psychedelics does, it helps you be that, you know what I mean? It helps you accept who you are as a person, because at the end of the night, all you got is you. You know what I mean? You're not around all this stuff. You're not sleeping in your car.
I have the ability to be a loner. I wouldn't consider myself a loner at all. I still get good company come by here at least once a day. Someone stops by and checks on me or hangs out. But I make my way down to the city a lot. You know, I go by Motion Family Office, which is the Winmore Agency. I go by ABV Gallery. I fucking make my rounds. I'm a social butterfly. I think it's another part of just being a human or an animal, you know? Yes. Or like a pack animal. I got to see people sometimes.
No, exactly.
I'll be out here so long, I start talking to myself, and it bugs me out. I'll be like, oh, man, you're getting weird now. You're just talking to yourself.
So in terms of like getting back to the Atlanta thing and how it's had a huge influence on your life, you know, you move here and you move here when you're young, and like you end up finding yourself, like you said, selling drugs, doing this, getting into graffiti. How do you think that this, the course, like the ripple effects of life from when you moved here, how it influenced what you got into, like the just the activities that you would end up doing and the way you were started thinking?
I think being in Florida, my mom's a pretty wild woman. She still is. She's married to a Puerto Rican man that's a Latin king from Puerto Rico and Chicago. They're just a little wild. You know, they're very rebellious. And I think I was born like that because of my mother. And she taught me a lot of things, kind of prepped me for being here in a lot of ways. Like when I got here, I was so ready somehow. And then there was just so much stuff to grab at, you know, there was so much. I mean, there's so many directions I could go in, which there was no directions where I came from. So I don't know. Just it shaped me, I guess. I was able to use all these skills I'd acquired from Florida, and also just being able to navigate like scary areas. There's alligators, you know, it's a fucked up environment there. Also, there's a lot of poverty there too. Actually, the poverty there is a little more third world than here. So when I came here, people thought they were poor. And I was just like, you guys fucking have Jordans on. Like, you ain't poor. You know, you might live in the projects, but you guys are living good, you know? And I don't know. I was just ready for it. And also the people here, a lot of people here didn't seem to like each other, especially blacks and whites, but also neighborhoods. And I felt like since I wasn't from a neighborhood generationally, especially, I was able to go to any neighborhood. And people used to bug on that about me. Like, man, how you been hanging out over there with them? Like, you go to this school, and I'll be like, that shit never comes up when I hang out anywhere. I just go where I want. And and that way I just made so many friends everywhere. I was able to network. Everything I'm able to do today was because of all this people I met, all the things I learned throughout the late 80s and early 90s here in Atlanta.
And coming here and getting introduced to graffiti, and you talk about in some video how about that you, a lot of the people down south, they focus on freights because when you hit the streets, it just, you might not be as known, as opposed to freights can get you known on a wide range. How was your experience with like your approach to graffiti when you moved down here?
Well, I started soaking up a lot. I started learning quickly without even meeting writers. I could just tell how things were going just by looking at the graffiti, the things people wrote next to their graffiti. I could tell it was dead serious. I took it dead serious. And then I started meeting these characters and realized they were even more serious than I imagined, you know? And, I don't know, it was like joining a fraternity or some shit. It's like almost like people don't fuck with you, and then a lot of people just leave and like, I don't want to fuck with that. Like it's like a hazing or some shit, you know, and you got to prove heart and respect to the culture, and also you got to prove respect by being good at it. So I learned that through graffiti. But
so you took it super seriously when you...
Yeah, and then, you know, this place was really behind. This is the South, so, you know, there wasn't magazines and internet. There wasn't a lot of writers here, but the ones that were homegrown here were really raw. Mm-hmm. And then a guy named Chase from LA moved here. He was a Rockwood Street guy. He was also UCA, the president of UCA crew from out there, down with OTR and all them shits. Mm-hmm. But anyway, a guy named SB moved here from New York City, and these guys had so many photos and so much knowledge of their cities that meeting just these two people gave me the knowledge I gained then I still have now. And I think I even surprised like old New Yorkers. They're like, how in the fuck could you know that? You know, I was like, I just know this guy SB, and he taught me, I think, damn near everything that you can be taught about graffiti, even shit you can't learn in no books, you know.
When you started writing, what did you favor most, like the hand style throwaway pieces? Like
I mean, and I didn't learn, you know, the hand styles, of course, is, if anybody knows anything, knows that that's the most important damn first step. It was just my natural first step. I didn't have spray paint and stuff. I had markers and was able to acquire those things. So I just started tagging. And then I started learning how to flow markers and stuff and writing on different surfaces. And I just kind of fell in love with that. And also, you know, having to maybe write sideways on something and like trying to like always adapt to a spot and pick a spot, adapt to a spot. It's just like strategy that can be applied to anything in life. And then, you know, of course, I started drawing pieces, and I met SB, and he's like a big throw-up guy. He comes from Brooklyn, two-letter throw-up names. He taught me all about the beauty of all that, you know. So throw ups became very important to me, and having a throw up that was quick but super fresh, mm-hmm. you know.
Do you have any names before ducks?
I had like a million names. Yeah, yeah. You know, and this is like for the reasons of fucking that people were tough here on graffiti that I kept just having different names because I wanted to do graffiti and learn how to do it and by not just drawing it but like spray painting on walls and shit. So I just had like 50 names. Mm-hmm. But I wrote like prone, I wrote biz crazy, busy, riff, riffsky. And then I saw the fucking Faith of Graffiti book with all the 70s names. And I saw there was a riff and I was like, oh, I can't write that. I even had that. It was like, you know, 10, 11 years old. I just had common sense not to write other people's names. Don't write over people. Don't even write next to people. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'd be like, because I remember like catching tags. Someone right next to me be like, man, what the fuck, man? Like, what you pen paling for, dude? Like, you know, like. Go find. There was so much space in Atlanta too. We weren't fighting for fucking, you know, roll down gates here. So when someone wrote next to you, you're just like, come on, man. Like,
yeah. What's the deal with the law out here in terms of how they approach craft? You know, they're here about some places that it's like a felony first time. And
it's ever changing too, though. You know, like this place has gotten so fucking strict at times where there was a vandal squad and they were like,
there was a vandal squad here.
There might still be. I don't even know, man. I can't even keep up with this shit. But nevertheless. At one time, I won't get too into names and all that shit, but there was just a bunch of people here, a lot of kids that were young, the younger generation, they started going hard. And this was coming out of like the Hense and Sever, like Rain, and Hense was still painting, but I think he was kind of like fading out, but I can name him because he was in the paper and I think he even countersued or whatever. But anyway, they raided like 9 dudes in one day here one time.
What?
Yeah, it went really heavy, which I think was a surprise to everybody because nothing like that had ever happened.
Really?
Yeah. But then it seems like nobody cares anymore. It almost seems like the point we got to now, like there's this like, I don't even know if the police know what's legal, what's not legal with Krog Street. Yeah. That's just like a practice place now. It's like Venice Beach, you know, the wall at Venice Beach. Yeah, yeah. It's worse than that actually, because you'll see like people out there with their fucking like 6-year-olds painting over fucking Erupto pieces and shit. You know, it's like, I'm just saying, this is like, you know, it's just.
When you were coming up writing in Atlanta, you ever got caught?
Yeah, you know what? The one time I got caught was actually a time we're doing a legal wall, and it was behind this place called Earwax, a famous record store on Peachtree Street. It's where like a Freaknik used to happen and shit. It's like a sick ass spot to paint. The owners, you guys can look that shit up online. They're famous dudes, fucking old DJs and shit, hip hoppers. Anyway, they said we could paint the back of their store. We started painting it. This dude, Learn, actually had just got his car back from impound from being stolen. We were back there painting, and the store closed, and the cops right afterward pulled up, laid us all on the floor real aggressive, and we brought like every can of paint we ever had. It was like our whole collections because we were about to kill it, and they were just really fucked up. They stole my CD Walkman at the time and my camera. They thought that we stole that car. So anyway, it's Thursday. We go down to the ACDC, which is the worst, Atlanta City Detention Center, right next to the Greyhound Station, across from Magic City. We end up in that motherfucker, and we don't get our court date till Monday morning. And then we get our court date Monday morning, and the judge is just like, why did you guys even arrest these guys? Like, you should just give them a ticket.
Yeah.
And they just let us go, got a signature bond, but then we end up being there like 8 more hours and get out to like Monday night from Thursday. Anyway, that was my only time I got caught.
Really?
Oh, you know what? I got caught one time. But this time was funny, too. I was just fucking, I was with some rich folks, and I went to somewhere in Carolinas, like, I don't know if it was Asheville, somewhere fucking, some little town in there, and we were going to strip clubs and getting drunk and shit, and I just caught like a little white tag on like a pipe or something, and some big ass cop ran up on me and was just like, he gave me a ticket. But anyway, I went back and I fucking washed it, took a picture of it, went to court, and the judge was like a really nice woman, and I was just like, hey, for whatever it's worth, I have a picture on my phone, I washed the area, I took a picture of what I did, I took a picture, I washed it. And she was like, well, that's commendable, you showed up all the way here from Atlanta, you cleaned it. She's like, you can just get out of here. And I was like, that was it. So I don't have any wild stories about getting caught. I got some good chase stories and getting away stories, but
you're like, what?
Getting caught.
For like the chase stories?
Chase stories just happen just like, which now I don't even think I would let it happen. But, you know, when people roll up on you in freight yards, you just start running. And I don't know why they start chasing you because nobody knows who each other are. But at some point, I just was like, hold on, man. Like, I don't let that shit happen in the streets. So I just started treating it like the streets, especially after I wasn't a little kid anymore and just being like, I ask the questions around here. I'm the authority on these tracks. This is my territory, you know? And, like, I never had any problems. We had one guy who was just like, I'm calling the police or whatever. And, like, my friend was walking down the hill, and I was still up on the train tracks. he was like, you guys are the ones, you're the ones riding on these trains. And it's like nighttime and I had like a bag of paint and I just came blazing down the hill and I just thonked him in the head, knocked him, just had him like sliding down the hill. But yeah, just like shit like that, you know.
How do you go about getting the legal walls? Because you talk about how pretty much you don't have to necessarily paint illegally anymore, like you specifically.
Yeah.
You can get the walls legally and do what you want legally.
You know, what's funny about that is even when I've been doing illegal shit, just like, you know, the status, like I was talking about, like a lot of people really fuck with me in this city. Some people for my art and my good, but a lot of people, if we go roll around or something, you'll see a lot of people just be like, yo, what's up, man? You know, just like on some fucking shit. So I was painting like a fence in East Atlanta Village with that dude, Hef, you know, Hef from New York, Smart Crew Hef. Mm-hmm. He was like, dude, throw ups on this fence. And I was like, cool. And we went, and the lady came out, and she was like a lesbian lady, and she was just so cool. She was like, oh, Dr. Dax, you know, like, what's up? And I was like, what's up? And she was like, you're going to paint on my fence? And I was like, she was like, yeah, word, you know, like, and I was like, cool, we're just going to do throw ups on your fence. And then she like fucking saw me, and later she's like, yeah, some people were trying to paint art murals over your stuff. I told them that is art and you can't go over Dax, you know? And I was just like, that all came from like just about to just do it illegally and mm-hmm. bomb your fence. But I find that happens sometimes too. I just be doing shit like that. And it just, it's okay for me to do at this point, I guess.
How did you transfer from going from just graph into like canvas, more mm-hmm. abstract art, using all these, you know, you're accepted as art shit now. How did you get into that?
That just was like a natural progression, I think. You know, I wasn't always just like a bomber. I really liked using colors and just very, I wouldn't consider it psychedelic, but I guess now looking back, it was like, I'm just kind of psychedelic in my style. And I don't know. I think just the art aspect of what I did and doing so much of it, especially like on freights, I used to really go hard on the colors and shit on freights. And people caught wind of that and started wanting to buy stuff. They're like, you sell canvases, we got prints. Like, just, I was like, what the fuck? Like, fuck no. I guess that was another part of my programming within graffiti, was just that this ain't for art. You know, we'd all watch Style Wars and heard Scheme say, like, I didn't do this, start going to Paris and shit, you know? But I still feel like that. Like, my graffiti, I still just like to go paint freights, and I don't bomb Atlanta very hard because, I mean, I paint shit here, but I don't go hard on here because, I don't know, I mean, they know who I am here, but, you know, I go to other cities and bomb, and I'm just true to that, and I just love that. I love bombing. I like painting things that I don't have permission to paint. I don't know.
Yeah. In terms of your canvases, like, how do you come up with these ideas? Like, is it how you feel in the moment? Because I see you... It's amazing. You have like an original style where you try to squeeze in like a inspirational quote and like a specific surface. You know what I mean?
Yeah, how did that come about? There's variations of
but
it.
That
too.
One is crazy. Does that one say something?
At that. Yeah, that one says the value of time depends on how you spend it.
Yeah, because it's like hard.
It's jumbled up.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, that's just, I just started deconstructing what I did because I've been doing what I do so long, painting canvases especially too. Started really going hard painting canvases in like 2000, but. Just got more and more into painting canvases. And then, you know, when I got out after my third indictment, it just like, I don't know, I just had like a revelation of just like, what am I going to do? And I was Patty Krongold, famous designer, interior decorator, fucking club owner. She's like a Studio 54 person. She hung out with Warhol and Herring. She had gotten in touch with me, and I just like idolized this woman. And she was the first one to like fucking be like, yo, I got this little budget, like embarrassing budget. But I was like, shit, that's good ass money, you know? Like, even as a dope boy, I was like, that's fucking dope money. I'll do that shit. And she was just like, yeah, you got like 2 months. And I was like, shit, I got that shit done in like 2 days.
Yeah.
And she was just like, fuck. But anyway, that was the first time where I was like, hold on, I feel like I just kept my integrity. I just did me. She didn't even she just do you. Here's your money, you know? You got a long, this chunk of time. You better hurry up. I did mm-hmm. it fucking so fast. You know, I was just like, oh, I'm built for this shit. Mm-hmm. I think I'm built for it. And when I think that the other people I remember working there were just like, they were intimidated by the amount of shit we had to do. It was just like, we can never get this done, you know? And they were sitting there more scared and procrastinating than anything. And I just came in there like a writer would, you know?
Yeah. You know, so the other people weren't writers?
They weren't writers. They were like some artists I respect, but they had never taken on a project this big. Mm-hmm. And I never had either, but I mean, I painted freight trains, which are big things. And, you know, that's just a pressure situation in a freight yard. And being in a nice club, a place that's about to be a mega club, was not an uncomfortable environment for me, you know, especially the painting. And I was like, we can plug our radio up, we can smoke weed, there's fucking tequila, whatever.
Isn't that interesting? Like, we've been talking to other people, like Kep being one of them, and he was saying how, like, shit that he's learned in graph, he's applied to his, like...
I learned a lot from Kep.
His broader life and in his work. And you're talking about how, you know, they saw this big project, and they're like, fuck, yeah. We can't do this. And you're like, you've painted yards, or you're under pressure.
And big walls with friends, you know? Yeah. And had to tie those things together. A lot of my friends just do their pieces, and I'd be like, oh, we got this whole wall. Let's, like, fucking... And they'll be like, you do it. And they sit and drink and, like, cheer me on. So I used to always be that guy to, like, do the whole backgrounds and do fucking maybe characters, whatever.
So you make your living just off of this art. Did you ever think...
And my personality.
Yeah. Did you ever think that you'd do something like this?
No, you know, and that was a scary-ass thing for me, too. Like, I thought I was going to sell drugs my whole life. I was just like, this shit's working really good from a young age. And got a little spoiled even kind of because of it and enabled. Started making money when I was 14, 15. By the time I was 18, I was making a lot of money. And by the time I was 21, I was legit rich. And, you know, that shit fucking...
Just off of selling.
Yeah, and everybody else was, like coming back from college and shit. I dropped out early, too. So I'd just been out of school. And people I grew up with were coming back from college confused and shit. Debt. Fucking didn't know what they were doing. And I was just like, hold on, man. Everybody, my family, my brother, just like, play sports, go to school, you know, all this shit, you know. And just like... I just was like, fuck this shit. I'm just going to do what I feel like I want to do and just do whatever I want. And that kind of the attitude I got from my mother and my stepdad, you know. And I just remembered instantly just being like, you motherfuckers don't know what to do. You don't know what, you don't never hung out in this city really because you were kids and they want to like attach themselves to you, you know, and be like, take us out. And, like, we want to be like you. And I'll just be like, you already missed all them years. You didn't put your work in, you know, like you got to start over now. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. That was just like a good perspective for me, you know?
You think it was like a really organic process getting into, you know, just essentially living off of your art and your personality?
Yeah, well, you know, when it really, you know, and I hate to say this, but, you know, when the fire was under my ass to figure out what else I was going to do, I was just like, I already had Patty Krongold offering me shit. I mean, it was all simultaneous. Like, the stars were in line from getting in trouble, having a revelation, work ready. And then after I did that job with Patty, you know, she's like, someone else wants you to do this, whatever. And someone wants to buy a canvas. And I was just like, word. And then I didn't want to paint my name. I never liked when I would go see like a graffiti writer have a gallery show. And I'd just be like, you just painted your name on 10 canvases. Mm-hmm. You know, it's dope. But I don't know. I just want to buy. I don't want to have your name hanging on my wall necessarily. Like, I just knew there could be more. And there used to be a dude named Mayday. I think he was writing here in the 70s. He used to like use red roll paint and write like, you know, U.S. out of Iran and just shit, you know? And I was always like, I just loved the messages. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after looking at like subways and people writing messages and rap lyrics and all this shit, I just got really into the power of words. And it's just like, I think I can do something more than my name.
No, absolutely.
A message.
There is a power in words. And you have this one where it's like a clever person. I got it right here. It's, I know you know what I'm talking about, but.
Yeah, I think the canvas is actually still sitting right over there.
Really?
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it just talks about how a clever person. Let me find this shit.
No, you know, having I make up a lot of quotes and.
Did you? No, you didn't. But that one is like. I did. And then Einstein,
some
right?
I don't make up. Yeah, that one was
and
Einstein.
You added some shit.
Yeah, and then you know sometimes I put my take on them or I like everybody love everybody's Will Ferrell from. I can't remember the name of the damn movie right now, but it's a basketball movie. Andre 3000's in it, but he has like an ELE ring. And everybody's arguing on the bus, yeah. And he's like, ELE. And everybody's like, what the fuck is that? He's like, everybody love everybody, you know? Like, fuck, shut up. Mm. And I felt like that. I feel like that all the time in the world where I just like all this stuff's like going on, especially because I'd be quiet out here and I go to the city and people are yelling about shit. And there's fucking Hebrew Israelites and fucking just crackers and all this shit everywhere, you know? And just be like, shut up. I mean, everybody love everybody, you know?
When you do the murals and people walk down the street, you have like... The message that you decide to put out there has an effect on their day-to-day because even if it's subconscious and they just read it real quick, you're setting the tone for, you know, it's a huge
I think word. I serve it well, too, because, you know, I had a blog called snortthis.com. I used to do, like, National Geographic things that, like, go take pictures of people's meth cribs and meth situations and shooting up heroin, whatever. And I was always just trying to show the world a little window into the things that I had access to, but I didn't realize how much of a bad influence it was, you know? So now I just like, I don't know, I just started realizing the power of like, how influential maybe everybody's influential in their own way, but I feel like I might just be a little more influential than the average man. Mm-hmm. I started understanding that. And then, and people started dying around me. And I remember them being like, you gave me my first X pill and bump of coke, you know, and now they're dead or something. And I'm not saying it's all my fault, but I'll just be like, just like those trophies, you know, I remember people from looking at my blog like, man, you just get to travel the world and snort cocaine and hang out at crack houses and hang out at mansions. And all you got to do is write your name on everything. You know, you get this life, you know, and people went for it. And I was just like, whoa, hold on. That's not exactly how it all went down, you know. But I started just being like, wow, man, like I have a strong influence on people. And then I know people who are more influential than me, and I've bad influenced them into being bad and shit. Everybody's a rock star, you know, like. So
what led about to you stopping the selling of drugs for?
I just kept getting indicted, and all my friends kept fucking. You know, everybody's just getting in trouble, getting time. You know, the shit was cute for a long time, and then you know, you see people at the distance getting in trouble, and I don't know, just when it started hitting home and getting really close to me, and then I was going through an indictment, and my really good friend was murdered during this indictment, and I needed him during that time, you know, so. Just seemed like the world was fucking melting around me. And I remember I was sitting in jail, and I'm like, my bond was like $50,000, and my girlfriend at the time was just like, I'm coming to get paid. And I was like, no, just leave me here. It's only 21 days till court. And I remember she just did it anyway, and I was like, damn, you know, like, oh, like I gotta have to pay her all this money and shit, you know. And just like, I owe him my homeboy money, and I owe fucking the lawyers money, and just everything. It's like, fuck, what am I doing with myself, you know? So I was just like, if I can just get myself out of all this shit, man, I'm just going to fucking go hard as fuck. I'm going to hit Patty Krongold up, you know?
Dude, it's amazing to see you, you know, like, fucking show these messages to the public. Because, like, we were talking to Ket yesterday, and there was, like, a black wall across the street. It was just painted. And he's like, whoever writes on that wall, it's like a responsibility in a way, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. The community gets to see what's on that wall. So you putting out these messages, it's like...
What you going to put out there?
It's a certain vibe you're putting out, because, you know, like, you're going to leave that neighborhood...
What you put out there is what you get back, too.
Exactly. Like, so. You leave that neighborhood, and those people still have to live there, you know what I mean? They walk by that wall every single day, and whatever is on that can influence their day, yeah. Can influence their
That's
attitude.
That's what I say. I think I serve it well, because I fucking... I am who I am, and I have a bad reputation. Even till this day, people still... My past is haunts me till this day. I don't know if it haunts me, but it's there, you know? And I think the fact that I've changed my ways, and I genuinely fucking have positivity and love, and I put these messages out there. I put my fucking heart and soul into making paintings and with my energy and putting them out there in the world. And I think it's well received. I think people like seeing a motherfucker go from being a pirate to an angel or something, you know, if that's the way to describe it. But, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm a fucking angel. You know, I still have a lot of bad habits, and you know, one thing at a time. But I just try to make sure I don't harm no one else.
Yeah, do you ever think about
number one
with your doing of ayahuasca and kind of understanding, like, getting this feeling of overwhelming unity and connection to everything? Do you ever think about the fact that how crazy it is? At least for me, looking at all of this, that essentially you were doing all that. You ended up going to prison, and your friend ended up getting killed, and. And now, like, you seem like you're all right. Like, you seem like everything was cool. Like, it seems like you had been working on this since you were a little kid.
Yeah.
And that it all worked out perfectly.
Not consciously. Yeah.
And do you feel like that had to happen for all of this to happen? Like, this was a part of, like, the integral yin-yang of it all.
Yeah, it could have went a different way. I guess if I knew then what I know now, I could have just fucking started with my art then, and, you know, who knows? I'd probably be like, damn, Keith Haring or some shit if I wanted, you know? Have sculptures in fucking Taipei or some shit. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, I have to think about, to fantasize about what could have been, but that's not what was. And, you know, the shamans always say that was just what you needed. Mm-hmm. Maybe if I didn't go through all this stuff, maybe I wouldn't have become that artist. I probably became something worse. You know, I don't know. But my life led me into this naturally. It was organic. And I always tell people that too. If you look at, like, my very first shit, it looks like it was trying to be what it is now. And it's just development, you know, passion too. I think, you know, all my friends, everybody was always caught up mostly in trying to get pussy, you know. And then I grew up in gay neighborhoods too. Some motherfuckers were just trying to get boys. And everything always has to be surrounded by sex. And I just, I don't know. That wasn't me. I realized how much that was just like pleasure chasing. I understood pleasure chasing when I was younger. Which I didn't consider getting money and stuff pleasure chasing, because I considered it survival. But yeah. When I look back on it, I was abusing it like anything else.
Have you ever read any, like, Buddhism or anything like that?
Yeah, I used to have a book. I don't have any more. I lent it to somebody and never got it back. But it was given to me, and I guess it was supposed to be passed on. It's called Be Here Now.
Okay.
It's like a big purple book with a chair on the front of it. You ever seen that book?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that was the first time I was just like, I saw that stuff. And then I met a dude named Petita Pavaratis. He was a Hare Krishna. I met him a little Five Points, and he was always just like giving me books and stuff. And he gave me one, and I seen the painting of the dude with a cow head, and the cow with a human head, and he was about to slaughter it. And I don't know, just these imagery and this, like, these books that the Krishnas gave me were, that shit just hit me really hard. And that was like another sense of shame, you know, growing, being around the punk scene, skinhead scene and shit. They were like, what are you talking to the fucking Krishnas all the time for? And you left with that guy. What were y'all doing? You know, yeah. I'm like, he took me to go eat lentils at the fucking, you know, yeah. And I just like those. I just like that. I like their consciousness.
Yeah.
And I remember just, that was kind of like the first time where I was just like, man, if you want to hang out over here, you just got to be bad. If you start being conscious, you better go with them. You're like, you got to pick. You
felt
know?
Like they didn't mix.
They didn't mix. And then, you know, what was, you know, even back then, like, if you were like wore Adidas or some shit, and motherfuckers would be like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, and you go to school with Doc Martens on, it was like, no. It was like, it's just, things didn't mix here, you know?
So you were part of like the, like a actual, like, always skinhead.
Yeah, team. Yeah. And I was a member of a gang called the Pins here back in those days, okay. You know? And it was just a lot of crazy shit. And I loved it. You know, that shit was another exciting thing I learned about was the punk scene. And then, I remember the first time I seen some DMS New York dudes and the Cro-Mags and these like Agnostic Front motherfuckers come down, which was new to me too, because there was a lot of English people here for some reason. So we always just knew English punk. We knew English punk rockers, guitar players from Condemned 84 and all these people. And when the New York guys came down, they were fucking wearing like Adidas pants with the Adidas on, and like, I don't know. They didn't have the Mohawks and leather jackets. And I remember being like, hold on, look, it is okay to be both, you know, like I can like NWA and like Exploited, you know, like, I don't know. Just, I remember that like, you got to pick, you know, like you can't be into rap and shit. But then the New York guys came and I was like, fuck that. That's it. I was like, that was one of the things where I was like, you can't tell me nothing. Mm-hmm. You can be everything you want to be or nothing or whatever, you know, there's no, just boundaries and punk rock and all that shit. Pissed me off back then because I got into it because there was no boundaries and there was like so much open-minded to it. And then it seemed like within like 3 or 4 years, which seemed like 20 back then, it shifted into like so many rules in my life. So I was like, what happened to the rebellion? Why we got to follow these invisible guidelines?
You have to wear this.
And graffiti became the same thing at some point. You start painting like this and that's not right, you know? Mm-hmm. So I started doing everything wrong.
No, yeah, that's so true. Like,
and then what's funny is that, you know, I started doing wrong and it's considered fine art.
A lot of the old school like hardcore dudes and even now get into Hare Krishna. They get into meditation.
Maybe for the same reasons I did.
Like John Joseph, he was he's like super like bhakti yoga. Mm-hmm. Heart talks about how like he attributes the Hare Krishna to essentially saving his life for the most part. And then like same thing with like Ray Capo from Youth of Today. Like he's like super into all of that, and it just helps these people. You know, I think that there's like more of a common line that people. Pretend like there's not, like, between graph and maybe, like, the hardcore punk scenes and then wishing for this sense of, like, peace and wishing for the sense of, like understanding. And I think that there's a common thread that a lot of the people who are in these scenes feel this way, but they might not speak on it because it's like, you shouldn't paint stuff like that or you shouldn't wear shit like this.
Well, think about this, you know. I'm talking about 1986 to, like, 1992. I was hanging out at Little Five Points. Looked up to a lot of people. I knew fucking Moonstomp, Anti-Heroes, all these people. Met everybody that came through town. We hung out with HR, fucking after house parties and shit, you know. Saw so much shit. And, you know, I think back and none of those people are even here anymore. They're fucking dead, you know. Some of them made it out, but some of them aren't happy. You know what I'm saying? Like, and these were the same people that made me feel shame for rolling off with the Krishnas and shit. And even more interesting later, like maybe 20 years later, I remember what's that big museum in New York and Manhattan? It's like one of the biggest. It's like
Metropolitan?
Maybe the Metropolitan. It's this big and beautiful right outside. Yeah, yeah. It looks like a government building. Yes, here. Yeah. I remember being out there like, you know, like not even because of what it was. I don't know what it was. I was just out there bugging and it was just like, hey, is that Dax, you know? And I was like, what the fuck? And it was Petita Pavaratis, like, and he was just like, I can't believe it. And he knew because I had these roses on my neck when I was a kid. He was like, I knew it was you. I remember those. And I was like, Petita Pavaratis, like, what the fuck? I remember we were hugging. I was like about to cry, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was just like, it's so weird, like a movie, how like, things come full circle. And I had, like, now I was going to New York, and I just started doing what I wanted to do. And, you know, just, like, not living in the visible cages and just being able to, I don't know, be free, man. I just learned how to be free on my own, which other people find it impossible, you know?
No, that's a good word. Invisible cages.
Invisible cages and just invisible boundaries and so much shit. I even learned painting like that. It was just like a fucking like liberation. Yeah, you know.
Now you could see it in your art. Now that you say shit like that, there's like liberation straight up. That's just an explosion. Like no boundaries, just explosions. Yeah. Explosiveness.
Explosion of expression.
Yeah, and just doing everything wrong. Or not even wrong, you know, like there's a you can go online and there's like a, it might be like a meme, and it says it's a guy in the chair's upside down with all four legs pointing up, and he's like wrestling on top of it, and it says, if nobody knows what you're doing, you're not doing it wrong if no one knows what you're doing. And I feel like that's my whole strategy, my whole like that's like the blueprint of how I'm living.
Do you think you're gonna live right here forever,
right in this spot?
Yeah, just like I'm gonna
move soon, actually, you know. Things are ever changing. I'm not going to cry about gentrification right now, nothing like that. But I get shoved around. I guess I have my whole life, I feel like, especially in Atlanta. You know, I move somewhere, rent's cheap, space is dope. Next thing you know, I feel like I'm the Pied Piper. And the next thing you know, some other cool motherfuckers move next to me. Next thing you know, we got like the neighborhood. And then next you know, everybody fucking starts wanting to buy that. I don't know if it's because of us or whatever, but that, my dad used to even say shit like that. Like bohemians, poets, artists, they like move into like these buildings and hotels. And next thing you know, they want in. And then it ruins it. Money, you know. But Atlanta's been like that. I feel like I've been getting chased out of neighborhood after neighborhood.
Would you ever see yourself moving back into a city?
Yeah, well, I don't now. I kind of want to move further out. I want to have more land. I want to have like my own. I want to have like 2 acres or something, you know. I don't mind having neighbors. That's why I'm way over there. My neighbors are set off now, but I need like more neighbors. You guys are from New York, so you're like probably like, what the fuck? But, you know, as an animal, I need me a little space.
No, yeah.
You know?
No, and, I feel that, man.
I need to lay on the dirt. Yeah. Like people talk about put your feet on the dirt. Mm-hmm. Go just lay in it.
I have to go to Central. Yo, I've been going to Central Park. I have to go to Central Park and like find like a somewhat in the cut thing with like a tree or some shit.
Yeah, you'll dissolve if you don't.
This is just like metal clanging taxis, people, like there's so much, man. It's
a lot. I do the same shit like whenever I have time from work on the weekends. I'll just get on my bike and go upstate to the Catskills, like sit under a tree for a minute, and I tell people I do that. They're like,
if you're gonna live in New York, that's the way to do it.
Yo, you tell people you do that and they're like, what are you doing? Like, that's boring. Like, you don't, let's go to the, like, go party or some bullshit. I'm like, yeah, nah, dude.
But
like,
honestly, I really love seeing your crib, man, because I've noticed there's a thing about creative people's houses and they're just not like any other house. Like you go into another person's house and you'll have the sign like welcome home or like this is my love or some shit. You walk in here, there's just, it's like there was no boundaries as opposed to like, okay, there's a living room, there must be sofa, TV, coffee table, finished. Like when we went to Charlie's crib, and his crib is just bugged out, and it hypes me up to have.
Is it all do you think that, is there a common thing of functionality though?
No,
at least for individuals. Like
I think there's like the common thread is like you feel like you're in like a physical expression of their soul.
It's like being inside my brain.
Yeah, like I'm inside. Like there's like some weights here, you know, like
it's like no limits.
No limits. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I think I learned this through reading about Buddhism, or just, I think I could just channel that shit. I never had to like really research and dig in these things or hang out Petita Pavarazzi. These were like brief moments in time, but they were so fucking profound and how they shaped me as well and planted seeds at least, you know. I might have went into a life of this shit, but there's always the seed of like being better or just doing right, you know, and knowing right and wrong. And then also being like, you know, being bad's good, fun, whatever, you know, fucking... Mm-hmm. I'm older now, dude, so maybe it just has to do with age, you know? I grew out of that shit.
Yeah, just through all the years.
Maybe it's just that, you know?
You talk about how photos are just as much a part of graph as doing the graph itself, which I think that's being lost now because there's so many Instagram accounts that shoot photos strictly of graph that the individual writer feels like, well, I don't have to do that because someone's doing it like crazy.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I mean, I don't know. I never thought about it, but, you know, it makes sense quick. But, I mean, I've always – in 2003, I got a digital camera, and I don't know where any of my photos fucking are. And I have all my photos prior to that going back to, like, 80s. So it's like, missed the hard copy thing. Also, we were hanging out. We could be looking at photo albums, passing photo albums, looking at fucking phones, it just takes away the seriousness of it. You don't realize, like, hold on, that's a photo, and looking at it and looking, like, Martha Cooper is the best of all time.
But, the best.
You know, taking you to a moment in time, you know, taking a picture, you know, SB taught me the, especially with freight trains where walls, but you know, like whole train, half train, panel shot. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like archive walls, you know, you get the landscape, what's around there. You know, the tight shot, you know, each piece or whatever. And I just learned from SB looking, Martha Cooper just looking at subway art. It was like, I mean, I knew instantly how important pictures were right then. And I never even take pictures of my own shit. I just took pictures of old graffiti that I thought was going to disappear in Atlanta that I just cared about and still care about probably more than anything in my life was just the stuff that came before me.
Really?
And I think that came through not pictures, but like looking out windows of BART trains, you know, just experiencing it real life. And then things disappearing and someone having a photo of it later and being like, oh, I remember that when I was a kid, you know, and like
there's like a purity,
man. It's just, and then we traded photos, you know, we didn't have even email, so like Baser and SB, we used to write each other letters, trade photos. Mm. Now we've been best men in each other's weddings and shit, you know, but we didn't even know who each other were when we were first communicating. We were writing each other letters, you know. It's like there's just so much substance in that, and it takes so much effort and time. You gotta really be into something, and now everybody can be into everything, and it's just fucking rapid fire.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing with this podcast. Like, I've met people, like writers, that I would take the train as a little kid, and I would romanticize one throwie, for example, in particular. Like, I would see it every single day and, like, know every single detail of it, like, and then meeting that person, be like, yo, what the fuck? Like, putting two and two together.
And it had way more impact on you than they ever even could imagine, you know? And that's another thing I've always taken to mind now, too. I always remember being a kid and riding the train, just back and forth, getting off, going all the way to the other end, switching lines, just going back and forth, looking out the windows, just trying to see it. The windows are always dirty on the train, so you can never get the pictures. It just didn't work out. And then you had to go there. You'd have to like break into a building and climb on a rooftop. And I just was like, man, just so much effort, you know. But till this day, I still just get excited about like maybe a little kid looking out the window and seeing my shit and maybe sparking some fucking greatness on his ass, you know, like
so much passion. And
yeah,
so much purity.
I love the thought of fucking inspiring.
Yeah, pass it down.
I was on the train one time and I seen these like two little girls and they were looking out the window. I was on the 7 line and looking at all the graffiti on the roof in Queens and shit. And one of them's like, "What does that shit say?" They don't know I'm listening, right? And yeah. One of them's like, "What does that shit say?" And then the other one's like, "It says this." And then the other one's like, "Nah, it says this." And then one of them's like, "How do you think they got up there?" One of them was like, "They must have used a ladder and climbed up the building." These are super, super young. The other one's like, "Nah, they must have went through the inside." And then the one who said they must have went through the inside, the girl who heard her say that, just like kept looking. And then she goes, the door's open for them to leave. And she's like, "I'm going to write graffiti." And then she just leaves.
There you go.
And then the door's closed. I'm like, what the fuck did I just wait?
You know, it's like provoking thought and provoking like possibility. Yeah. And especially at a young age, you don't know shit. You know, you're a sponge. But just to be like, hold on, that guy fucking had like, how would you do that? You'd have to go do this. And just thinking about like taking your thoughts through this, just being like, I can't understand. And then just sitting there, you start strategizing, you know, you got your little young brain ticking like a fucking genius almost at that, just off that. I think it just takes
ideas
a spark.
Exploding.
Yeah. It's just like a vegetable, and next thing you know, I got a brain, and it's working, you know? And that's just how I feel, kind of.
No, I see, like, for example, high spots in graffiti. Like, I feel like it's like a glitch in the matrix. Like, everything is uniform. All these metal beams are, like, perfect, the same color, like, the structures. And then you see a fucking, like, throwaway or whatever, a piece, and you're like, dude, what the fuck? Like, that doesn't
make
sense.
That's very New York experience. I always describe Atlanta in the 80s, like, being in New York in, like, the late 60s, 70s. Mm-hmm. Like, it was so new, and, like, people kept getting better. It wasn't like New York where it had just been so advanced and passed on and developed. Atlanta had, like, Sir Leon and Sir Smith and these guys, you know, they were, like, 1970, 1969 on them, you know? And then, you know, guys like the United Kings had already quit by 85, but they had did Don D looking fucking huge pieces and just, like, all this stuff, these remnants, and I was just fucking bugging on it. And I just figured out how to do so much just by just thinking. I just got my thinking cap on really hard, and that's all I did. And I just drew on my desk at school. I drew in everybody's books. And that's you know, just relentless fucking passion and practice.
Amazing, bro. Yo, thank you so much for
yes sir.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
Thank you for this, man.
Thank you so much, man.
It was amazing.
Good to meet you guys, man.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Dude,
all right, peace, Dax.